Thank you very much, Mega and James, for giving me the opportunity to share some of the work that we've been doing in our lab. I've been working on this topic of invasion meltdown and how it relates to the soybean aphid. And before I explain the term, I'll kind of introduce you to the sort of web of interactions that start with the soybean aphid, which is an invasive pest. As many of you know, it's native to Asia and was first found in the US in the year 2000. But it could not have established here were it not for its two host plant species, both of which are non-native. One is, of course, the soy plant, which is native to Asia. And the other is common buckthorn and a few other species of buckthorn, which is native to Europe. And buckthorn is the overwintering host. There are also a couple of facilitator species which are non-native. And one is the European earthworm, which is not native to the north central U.S. And the second is the European starling, which is one of the birds that disperses buckthorn seeds. It's not the only one, but it's also not native. And sort of related to this is the fact that buckthorn is not only the overwintering host of soybean aphid, but it's also the overwintering host of oat crown rust. So just as soybean aphid could not have established here without buckthorn, also oat crown rust could not have established here. Lastly, there are predator species which are being facilitated by this whole group. And one of them is the Asian lady beetle Harmonia, which Bill just talked about in the last presentation. And then also down here, there's an Asian flatworm, which feeds on European earthworms. And this might look like a relatively complicated web of interactions, but it's actually sort of a simplified one. And because no native species are in this, so these are all introduced species. So now we'll get to this term called the invasional meltdown, which was first introduced by Simberloff and von Halle in 1999, and then later worked on more by Simberloff in 2006. And it's defined as community-level phenomenon in which the net effect of facilitations would lead to an increasing rate of establishment of introduced species and or an accelerated impact. And the first thing, I just want to mention that in this figure and in the definition, the key is facilitation, and all the red arrows here are facilitation arrows. And I didn't mention, but when an arrow has a regular arrow point, it's a positive impact, and when it's got one of these round points, it's considered a negative one. And so the first thing I'm going to try to do is ask how strong the evidence is in this whole system for actual meltdown. And I'll focus at first just on, basically just on these four species, a sort of core, and three questions. And the first one with this worm and buckthorn interaction, is it really reciprocal facilitation? Do they really help one another? And the second one involves this link here, the one between buckthorn and soybean aphid. And here the question will be, can buckthorn explain variation in soybean aphid abundance? Lastly, I'll try to deal with this third link here, asking whether soybean aphids are increasing the spread and or abundance of the Asian lady beetle. So the first question is, do worms facilitate buckthorn? And there's a couple of points here. And the first is, and this is work that Lee Frelich has done, is that in sites in Minnesota, you cannot find buckthorn without the earthworms. So which might mean that the buckthorn needs the earthworm to germinate. And it's known that what earthworms do is that they change the soil and the leaf litter in such a way that essentially helps buckthorn. And I've got a few slides to show that. So what we have here is not proof, because no one's done sort of the critical experiments to look at this, but strong circumstantial evidence for this link, and also that this link is pretty strong. And just a few pictures here. This is a European earthworm, and basically what they do is they eat the leaf litter at night. So there's an earthworm burrow here, and this is sort of early in the summer, I guess. And then later in the summer, there's sort of fewer and fewer leaves as the worms come up and eat the leaf litter. And what you end up with is something like this. This is a section of forest with earthworms, and this is a section of forest with none. And this is the kind of ground that buckthorn likes to germinate in. So as I said, there's strong circumstantial evidence for this link. The second link is, does buckthorn facilitate the worms? And this link is probably there, but it's not as strong. There are plenty of plots that have worms, but not buckthorn. So it's clear that the worms do not need the buckthorn to live. But you do tend to find more worms under buckthorn than under under other plants. And it does apparently generate chemical conditions that are favorable for buckthorn. So for this link here, a positive link here, there's some indication of that, but it's probably a weaker link. We'll now move on to the next link, which is the link between common buckthorn and soybean aphid. And we know, you know, of course, that soybean aphids feed on buckthorn, so, you know, in that sense, the link is there. But the question is, on a broader scale, can variation in buckthorn abundance explain variation in soybean aphid abundance on a regional scale? And we tried to get at this question in sort of an indirect way by looking at a couple of USDA databases. One, looking at the fraction of counties in a state that have buckthorn in them, and this is stuff that you can just get off of USDA websites. And the second is on the fraction of soybean acreage sprayed. And in this case, we assume that the spraying is for soybean aphid. And you can see that there's a positive trend. And of course, this is just a simple linear regression, and it's only a correlation. But, you know, it does seem that, you know, as you increase buckthorn, more soybean aphid is sprayed for. So it does suggest that the more buckthorn you have, the more soybean aphid you have regionally. So now we're going on to the third link. And the question here involves the Asian lady beetle Harmonia. And the question is, does the presence of soybean aphid, has that led to higher abundance or spread of the lady beetle? And just some points here, and I will elaborate on these in later slides. First, it's pretty clear that since the arrival of soybean aphid in the north central U.S. in 2000, that there are now more Harmonia, and I'll show one slide of that. This has led to some biocontrol of soybean aphid, some significant biocontrol. You know, although as you saw on the last slide, soybean aphid is still clearly a pest, so while that biocontrol works under some circumstances, it doesn't work under all circumstances. Third, as maybe all of you or many of you know, this insect has now also become a pest sort of in its own right. So I'll sort of deal with these. This is a data set from the Kellogg Biological Station in Michigan showing the number of sticky trap catches of Harmonia. This line here is pre-soybean aphid, which is in 2000, and this average line is post. So it does seem like there was a jump after soybean aphid had arrived. As I said, Harmonia can be a useful biocontrol agent of soybean aphid. This is one of a number of cage studies done by Alejandro Costamagna, and other similar studies have been done in other states by other people. And this is sort of a typical thing that you find in some of the studies. Here there are actually three kinds of mesh: fine mesh, medium mesh, and large mesh. And the fine mesh excluded both the large predators and the smaller predators, like predatory flies and minute pirate bugs. And the medium mesh only excluded the larger predators, like the coccinellids, and the large mesh, which allows them both in. So you can see that when all predators are present, soybean aphid numbers are low. This is here the economic threshold for spraying. The economic injury level is about here or something. So these predators do keep soybean aphid at sub-economic levels. And it seems to be more due to the large predators like the Asian lady beetle than the small ones, because if you let in the small ones, it doesn't help that much. So as I said, although Harmonia can do this, it doesn't do this under all circumstances. And also, as I said, Harmonia has reached pest status in sort of a number of ways. One is that it can actually be a pest of grapes. So it can feed on grapes in the fall, and then it gets into the wine, and the wine doesn't taste that great. So it's actually a pretty big problem in that sense. And as Bill just mentioned, it can prey on native coccinellids and also compete with them, and also feeds on the larvae of the monarch butterfly. And as I'm sure many of you know, it can be a human nuisance and an allergen. So to the extent that we now have more Harmonia due to soybean aphid, this is sort of an indirect effect of soybean aphid. So this pest problem can be attributed to soybean aphid to the extent that we now have a lot more Harmonia. The second part of this talk is going to be about the implications of meltdown dynamics, or the extent to which they really are meltdown dynamics for management, mainly soybean aphid, but also other members of the complex. And I'm going to talk about two possible implications. One is that control of one of these species could facilitate control of some of the others. The most obvious thing is, and this is probably what you're all thinking, is that if we just get rid of buckthorn, then we'll get rid of the whole thing. Then we'll get rid of soybean aphid, we'll have less Harmonia and less earthworms too. And people have been trying to do this for a long time, and it takes a lot of manpower, a lot of money, and it's really difficult to make a dent. But now that it's sort of becoming clear that soybean aphid is a part of the picture, the sort of stake, this is sort of a brand new stakeholder group. So this is a brand new group of people that would want to see buckthorn gone. So it might be that the cost could be that you know we could basically now get more people out there trying to remove it. Second, biocontrol of buckthorn has started. I've got 3 minutes, and it's sort of at the beginning phases, and you know we'll see if that works. You could also consider earthworm control. You know, I'll just say briefly that it really hasn't been looked at, and you know we don't know how that would work. A second possible implication is on classical biocontrol of soybean aphid. And I'll bring in a new player. This is Binodoxus communis, which is a Chinese parasite of soybean aphid, which we've been working with since 2007 and have done releases of. So the question is, will Harmonia have a negative impact on this species? And indeed, we have evidence that it can and it does. We know that Harmonia feeds on soybean aphid parasitoid mummies. We know this because we see chewed mummies in the field, and also using predator gut content analyses, we can find the parasitoid DNA within Harmonia guts. Second, you can see that the fraction of mummies that are chewed can really get pretty high by the end of the season. This is partly, you know, because the chewed mummies don't fall off the plants maybe for a few days or weeks, but also partly because there's more chewing predators later in the season. And from this study, the main chewing predator was Harmonia. So the model that we're kind of left with is that buckthorn and possibly the absence of parasitoids leads to high aphid densities, which indirectly leads to high Harmonia densities, which indirectly has a negative impact then through the buckthorn on classical biocontrol. So the summary here, because I've got to end here, is that there are a number of dynamics in this interaction that are consistent with meltdown. But we're not ready to call it that. Confirmation of some links is still not there, and the strength of some of the links is not really clear. Second, to the extent that there are meltdown dynamics, they have a number of implications for management. First is that the control of one species can help with other species, and the second is that classical biocontrol might be interfered with. And I'll end with that, thanking really quite a slew of great postdocs and students, and also my funding sources. Thanks for your time.